This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Electric shock. Assalamu alaikum. A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajeem. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. That was a really good speech. I was watching it from the back, and I feel like I'm on cleanup duty now or something. So actually, that's what I'll do. I had a speech, but I literally threw the papers. I was, nonsense. I just want to maybe provide some additional material that might be helpful based on what Linda said. And by the way, I mean, I really, my wife's Palestinian and she wears hijab. And when I see, when I see people like Linda and her, especially, succeeding in life and being so prominent and outspoken and principled, it makes me really proud and very optimistic for the future. So, I was talking to her earlier about this. I think the next 4 years are going to be rough for our country, but I think they're really going to be good for Muslims. I think Muslims are going to come out of these 4 years, inshallah, much stronger, much more unified, and with a much firmer grounding in this country. That's nice of you to clap. Thank you. So, a lot of people have questions about, forming coalitions with non-Muslim groups, some groups that, have positions that we don't agree with, some social issues, some economic issues that we don't agree with, their lifestyles we don't agree with. And a lot of Muslims have problems with, for example, Black Lives Matter. They say, Black Lives Matter was founded by three lesbians, so we can't work with them. That's absolute nonsense. I want to explain why this is nonsense. Okay? First of all, I appreciate people thinking about this. But let's not be fooled by bad arguments. Okay? The Prophet, alayhi salam, worked with non-Muslims. And I'm not even going to go into his uncle Abu Talib. I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but the Battle of Uhud. Does anyone ever wonder why the Quraysh didn't continue to attack the Muslims after the battle had ended and the Muslims had retreated? They could have gone to Medina and attacked and maybe defeated the Muslims completely. Does anyone know why they hadn't? Because someone named Ma'bad from the Khuza'a tribe, a leader of the Khuza'a tribe, who was a mushrik, a polytheist, was actually a secret ally of the Prophet, alayhi salam. And he convinced the Quraysh leaders, don't go for another attack. So the Prophet had alliances with mushrikun, even though people who were not Muslim, they were mushriks. Before the Battle of Hunain, after the conquest of Mecca, when the Prophet and the Muslims, alayhi salam, needed more arms and armor, the Prophet borrowed arms and armor from Safwan bin Umayyah, one of the wealthiest people in Mecca, who was still a mushrik. He was not Muslim, he was a polytheist. And later on he became Muslim and he said, there's no one I hated more than the Prophet of God, but because he was so fair and just to me, he became the person that I love most in the world. So it's the Prophet worked with non-Muslims for good causes. And there's Imam Suhaib Webb, mashallah, he told me this earlier, and we were talking about it. It was a fascinating discussion, right? When the Prophet is going to the Treaty of Hudaybiyah in the year 6 or 7 of the Hijrah, he made a compromise with the Quraysh to not pursue the pilgrimage that year, but to go in the next year. And a lot of his companions were upset about this. How can you compromise with these mushriks, with these polytheists, with our enemies, people who fight us? And he said, this is in Sahih al-Bukhari, لَا يَسْأَلُونَ خُطَّةً يُعَذَّمُونَ فِيهَا حُرَمَاتَ اللَّهِ إِلَّا أَعْطَيْتُهُمْ إِيَّاهَا. They cannot ask me for any item, anything, if they're going to glorify, or if it's going to lead to the glorification of God, except that I'll give them this thing. And then, as I was reading about this today, I found in the commentary of Muhammad ibn Abd al-Wahhab on this book, Zad al-Mi'ad of ibn al-Qayyim, I found this in there. And I'll tell you, if you're a fan of Muhammad ibn Abd al-Wahhab, you'll be convinced by what I say. If you don't like him, you'll still be convinced of what I say, because if the most conservative person you can think of says this, then you have to accept it regarding non-Muslims. He says in his commentary on this hadith, he says that this shows that if somebody asks for something that is beloved to God, like justice, like peace, like helping the poor. If someone asks for something that is beloved to God, you have to give it to them. You have to help them in that matter. As long as there is not something, a greater evil that will become because of that. So as long as there's not some greater evil that will be promoted by helping them with this cause that's good in God's eyes, you have to help them with that cause. You have to join with them in that cause. So think about this when we think about forging alliances in this country. What are we fighting for? What are Muslims fighting for? First of all, we're fighting for our right to be here and practice our religion freely. The right of Muslims to exist in this land, to be people who are standing for the word of God in this land. What can be greater than that? And what are people asking for from us? You know, people who happen to be gay want to ally with us on a common cause. People who happen to be not Muslim want to ally with us on a common cause. People who we disagree with on certain political issues want to ally with us on a common cause. These are not weightier matters than the survival of Muslims in this country as free people. So just think about that. Think about, weigh what you're trying to gain and what you're trying to prevent losing. Weigh that from the potential harms that could be caused. And in the case of Muslims in this country, 90% of the time, there's going to be something that we can, much more important we're fighting for when we ally with non-Muslims, even those we disagree with, than any potential harm that can come from that. A lot of times people say, you know, I don't want to take this position, I don't want to stand up for this issue because it's going to be too controversial, because it's going to, you know, impede my career options, it's going to, you know, it's going to cause me to be unpopular, you know, some people might criticize me because of this. But, you know, the last couple of weeks have been very informative for me. A lot of times people say, you know, Muslims, we shouldn't talk about the Palestine issue. We shouldn't talk about this issue or that issue, these controversial issues, because these are, you know, too alienating. We're gonna lose our place at the table. And I love this when people say, you know, if you don't have a seat at the table, then you're being eaten for dinner. I always say to them, you forgot about another option. It's called being table decoration. Okay? A lot of times Muslims have ended up, during the last 10 years or so, they end up being table decoration. They're in the photo, they're lending, you know, they're making the picture a little more diverse with some interesting clothing and different skin tones, but what do they show for it? What do they get for it? Nothing. Those Muslims aren't used to asking for things. We're not used to asking for respect. We're not used to demanding our rights as Americans. So, you know, and I'm going to mention a brother whom I have a lot of respect for, I have a lot of affection for, and that's Representative Keith Ellison. You know, I support him. He's a wonderful politician, and I'm very proud of him as a Muslim, as a person. Keith Ellison has done everything he could to placate his critics. He's done everything. He signed everything he had to do. He made every statement he had to make to show that he was a kosher, you know, figure, that he was not problematic in his political views. And guess what? People still say that you can look in all sorts of publications, you'll still see him accused of being a Muslim extremist. When he was young, he was associated with this group. Once he wasn't a fundraiser for that group. Once he said this semi-controversial thing. My proposition is, what's the point of not taking positions because you're afraid you're not going to be accepted? If you're not going to be accepted anyway, why not take those positions? Why not stand up for something worthwhile? And by the way, if you're going to find out there's a lot of people out there who agree with you. You know, the other day I was, you know, watching, like, channel flipping. My kids wouldn't go to sleep. They're little kids. They wouldn't go to sleep. So, of course, watch TV. And, you know, there was this performance of The Wall, Pink Floyd, like Roger Waters' The Wall concert. And I sat there with my two sons, and I was looking at it, and I was just so, I told them, Shuf hadha, hadha yudafi' an al-Falistiniyin. I said, see this guy? He defends Palestinians. He stands up for their rights. There's so many people now, so many celebrities, so many scholars, so many activists, Christians, Jews, atheists, Buddhists, Hindus, who stand up for the rights of Muslims, who stand up for the rights of the oppressed. There's a lot of people out there doing that. Muslims, you know, we always think we're going to be the only ones out there standing up for people like the Palestinians. There's a lot of people out there standing up for them. And if we don't watch it, we're going to miss the boat. You know, there are Muslims today who take positions, for example, there are Muslims today who work against BDS, boycott, divest, sanction on the Palestine issue. There are Muslims who work against that, who try to undermine it. And they think they're being smart and crafty because they're going to get a seat at the table. But guess what? Now there's all these non-Muslims, leaders in different communities, respected people, you know, thinkers, artists, who are out there defending the rights of Muslims. And Muslims are going to get left behind. Those Muslims who are taking those positions, they're going to be left behind in history. The train of progress, the chain of justice is going to pass them by. So we can't afford. Muslims always have to be those people who are qawamuna bil qist, standing up for justice, shuhada lillah, testifying, bearing witness to God. These are the people that we have to be. If we're not those people, we're failing in our duty. We're failing in our duty to God. We're failing in our duty as Muslims. So ask yourself this question. Am I standing on the side of justice? Do I have the courage to stand on the side of justice? Because if there's one thing that I think is pretty clear now in the U.S., and certainly is going to be clear in the Trump administration, is that if you want to be an accepted Muslim, a good Muslim, you want to be the good Muslim, you're going to have to strip away everything you care about. You're going to have to compromise on every issue you can imagine. And you still might not be good enough. We're going to have to invent a new level of sellout Muslim to be good enough for the Trump administration. Is that worth it? Just so you get a seat at the table? No, this is ridiculous. It's not required of us in this country. The last thing I want to talk about, I had a more coherent talk, but then Linda made me rethink what I was going to say. But the last thing I want to talk about is, what does justice mean? And this I find fascinating. We look at the Sharia, the law of God. Whenever I do research on this, I always find something that blows my mind. I mean, really, the concern of Muslim scholars and Muslim judges for justice was so profound, so impressive. How do we manifest this in our lives? How do we manifest this in our lives? A couple of important principles. One, the presumption of innocence. Al-bara'a al-asliya, the presumption of innocence. People are presumed innocent. You have to bring evidence. You have to demonstrate evidence that they're guilty. This is true in American law, and it's certainly true in the Sharia. You have to bring evidence to show that people are guilty. If someone is accused of something, it is your obligation to believe they are innocent until they are proven guilty. It's not just being open-minded. You have to believe they're innocent. That is the only just thing to do. So if someone comes and starts telling you something, oh, do you see so-and-so did this, so-and-so did that, so-and-so committed this crime, so-and-so said this, so-and-so did that, the first thing you should say is, hat burhanakum in kuntum sadiqin. Bring your evidence if you're speaking the truth. And this is a very important, one of the most important principles in the Islamic tradition is al-isnad min ad-din. Lawla al-isnad laqal man yasha ma yasha. The isnad, the chain of transmission, the thing that proves the veracity of a statement is part of our religion. If not for the isnad, whoever wanted could say whatever they wanted. So if someone starts coming to you and telling you things, oh, did you hear about this, did you hear about that? Ask them, where did you get this information? try and find out where they got this information. I mean, this has happened to me just in the last couple of days on stuff that's not interesting. It's, you know, little academic stuff and things like that. But people making claims about, oh, such and such a scholar said this about that issue, such and such a scholar said that about this issue. He said it in this book. He said it in that book. And I go and I you have to go back to the original source and you find it's not as people claimed. Don't get carried away by rumor. Don't get carried away by what you're hearing. Don't get carried away by the whispers of the crowd. Always try and verify. Go to the source. What actually happened? Ask for evidence. This is how we can be just in our daily lives. This is how we can be just in our daily lives. We have to stand up for one another. We have to stand up for one another. This is very important. It's really easy to stand up for people after they're proven innocent, after their trials are over, after the problems have passed them by, after no one cares anymore. It's really easy to say, I was always with you. Can I get a selfie with you? Whatever. That's really easy to say. You know when it's hard? Is when the heat is on. And that's precisely when it matters. That's when you have to stand with people. That's when you have to stand with people. Regardless of who they are, regardless of whether you like them or not, there's a presumption of innocence. And another great example from the life of the Prophet, a hadith in Sahih al-Bukhari, that one of the companions, Al-Ash'ath bin Qais, had a dispute with a Jewish man over property. And they came to the Prophet, and they were disputing, and they wanted him to be the judge between them. And the Jewish man had bayina, he had two witnesses. Al-Ash'ath bin Qais, who's Muslim, didn't have any witnesses. So the Prophet awarded the land to the Jewish man. Al-Ash'ath bin Qais said, Prophet of God, you're going to give this to this Jewish man and not me, and I'm a Muslim? And the Prophet said, he had evidence. He had this evidence. You didn't have it. This is procedural justice. This is following evidence, regardless of whether you're in the same camp or in the same club or in the same group as another person, as one of the claimants. Another thing, even when people, let's say someone is guilty of something, whether it's a crime or just a sin, a bad decision, a gaffe, even if someone's guilty of something, whatever it is, that doesn't mean we don't have compassion for these people. You know, one of the things I think is really important is writing letters to prisoners. And if you go to my website, which, I don't know, drjonathanbrown.com, I mean, I don't want to promote my website or something. Actually, now it's good. But the point is, on it, there's a link for writing letters to prisoners. It's really, when you're in prison, getting a letter from somebody is like, it's like winning the lottery. That's what prisoners tell me. It's like winning the lottery. And writing a letter saying, hey, we're thinking about you. And, I saw an interesting book the other day, or I hope everything's going well. This is a little thing you can do to really help somebody. And there's always this, and I felt it in my heart before I first did this, before I first wrote letters to prisoners. I always felt this, isn't it something wrong? I'm writing someone who's guilty. And I'm going to be associated with them. I'm scared to do this. And I was so happy when I got over that. Because you know what? Just because someone's made a mistake doesn't mean they're still not a person with rights. You know, if you make a mistake, if you found yourself in a bad situation, would you want everyone in the world to turn their back on you? Or would you want them to also treat you with compassion? And we had a beautiful example of this in the life of the Prophet, this, episode of Habib bin Abi Balta. There's a man who actually, a Muslim, who's one of the people of Badr, who actually was sneaking a message to the Meccans and betraying the Muslim community because he was afraid of his family in Mecca. He was afraid that they would be harmed. And he was caught doing this. And the Prophet had mercy on him. He said, this man is afraid for his family. So even when people make mistakes, whether it's ethical mistakes, whether it's a social mistake, whether it's a criminal mistake, we still have to have compassion for these. This is part of Muslim justice. This is part of the justice of the Sharia, which is the omnipresence of mercy, even when the law is being laid out, even when punishments are being meted out, one has to be merciful. Jazakumullah khair.